Join us in Omaha, Nebraska on Saturday, October 8th, 2022, as I'm proud to present Historic Haunted Heartland, a night of incredible true stories of paranormal phenomena, with not one, not two, but three paranormal experts alive on stage at the newly renovated and beautiful Benson Theater in the heart of Omaha. The fun starts with Omaha historian and paranormal investigator Jamie Nestrel as she reveals the true details on the dark history of Omaha. Next, Johnny Hauser, the longtime caretaker and nation's leading expert on the Villisca Axe Murder House. We're going to explore the crimes committed there with him and the history of its haunting. And finally, making his debut in Omaha, John E. L. Tenney will deliver one of his signature weird lectures. Tickets are available this summer, and I invite you to visit Necronomicast.com and follow the show on Facebook for more information. Historic Haunted Heartland, brought to you by Necronomicast, Saturday, October 8th, 2022, a night that can change your life or afterlife. From the historic Haunted Heartland of Omaha, Nebraska, my name is Brian Corey, and it is my pleasure to welcome you all, young and old, to this episode of Necronomicast, the finest in creepy conversations. Now, all during the month of October, I'm featuring five episodes with six unique guests. I kick off this episode with Heather Taddy and Katrina Weidman. Now, you might remember them from Paranormal State and Paranormal Lockdown and other projects. But together on YouTube, they have a new show, a new special, a new project they're working on as friends, Travel the Dead. So we're going to talk to them all about that, about their unique perspective on the paranormal, working together all these years. So join me and Heather Taddy, Katrina Weidman on Necronomicast. And now joining me for a late night conversation on Necronomicast, man, woman, and child, I've got Katrina Weidman and Heather Taddy rocking the mics here on the Necronomicast. Friends, how are you tonight?
Good.
Great.
I'm very excited. Now, Heather and I, we established with our pre-show banter, Heather and I are old friends. We go way back, all the way back to March, when she came to Omaha to work on a documentary that she's working on with Chad Kalick. But Katrina, welcome to the show. And it's very cool to meet you. I've been a big fan and follow yours for a long time.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it's great to be here.
And so part of my October programming, I really wanted to highlight in a truthful, real way, women of the paranormal, because it seems like, especially like when I go on Twitter and places like that, it's not always the nicest place for all, you know, for anybody. But I really wanted to highlight the important voices and all the great work that you guys are doing for the paranormal as, you know, as women out there, because it tends to be guy heavy.
Very much so. And I'm glad you're highlighting it, because it's something we talk about a lot in the field, and it's something we talk a lot about a lot, even, you know, working in television, but it's still not, I think what we see in media doesn't represent what's actually going on in the field as far as diversity, because the field is really diverse, and not just with gender, but, you know, with a lot of different areas. And I think one of the saddest things I see with media is when we're out at events and we have the opportunity to meet the fans of the genre or people who do this for fun, or they, you know, they have a professional group. I often meet a lot of parents who have little kids, and they bring their kids because the kids are fans, and they'll say things like, I mean, to me and Heather all the time, like, "Ugh, thank God you guys are here, because my daughter really wants to do this and she has no one to look up to, nobody to follow, nobody to," like, you know what I mean? So it is so important to show that there's a bunch of different kinds of people who do this.
Sure. And I had the opportunity to talk to a high school paranormal group here in Omaha and give them like a mini lecture and do a question and answer session. And almost all of them were young ladies, and they had the best questions, and they had the best experiences, and they had, you know, just so much to share. And they were very appreciative of the fact that I came in and talked to them and answered their questions, and I asked them questions. But yeah, it was all pretty much young ladies and great questions. You know, I could tell they've been doing the research and reading and not just watching paranormal shows, because those are super fun to watch and very informative. Most of them. And I'm talking to TV people right here, but you know what I'm saying. But yeah. It was just really cool to see that it wasn't just you know, bros going to a haunted location just to act tough.
Yeah, it's a weird thing that happens. And what I find odd about it is the field itself and the audience of these shows skew those who identify as female. And so I always find it odd that we're not representing that. You know, I just feel like it's a weird space that way.
Yeah. And it's not just, well, like you said earlier, it's not reflected as much on television as it is in real life. So like when you guys go out to events and conventions and all these cons and everything, I'm sure that you see a lot different representation live in person.
100%. It is. I mean, from even just looking at people's jobs, you meet so many different people from all walks of life, from different countries, from different religious backgrounds, non-religious backgrounds, different genders, different races. Like it, you know, it's such an interesting field to work in that way, because it really does bring a bunch of different people together that might not otherwise cross paths. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I agree. It's definitely the media side of it that I think is skewed, you know, male dominant, when it's not really that way.
I feel like when we go to events, it is like a very mixed crowd, but I feel like the guys that come up to us, I know I hear this a lot. They'll say like, "You're so brave for going into these places. Like, how do you do it?" And it's just like funny that grown men are like, "Yeah, I wouldn't even go into those places. You spend all that time and alone." So I always get a kick out of that. But it's cool to think that, you know, we're representing the field as women. Like, I love that.
And kind of groundbreaking, because you guys, you know, got your start way back in college. You guys been on television for 15 years, more or less. Is that just about right?
Yeah, 15 years.
What is it like now, 15 years later, as a woman in the paranormal versus 15 years ago? Like, what's it like? I mean, I'm sure you guys groundbreaking, like Amy Bruni and all kinds of people that have kind of trailblazed in a way in terms of television and bringing it more mainstream. I mean, there's always been women in the paranormal for hundreds of years, but bringing it more mainstream, I mean, what's changed? Is it better, easier than it was 15 years ago?
Oh gosh, I haven't really thought about this. Because I feel like back then, you know, we had Lorraine. She was obviously one of the women we looked up to in the field, and we kind of took in her footsteps. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like there's more shows. There's obviously more people, including women, getting into the field.
I think, like, in what aspect do you mean, Brian? Like, as far as like just being like women, is it easier now? Or do you mean like just in general?
Well, you know, like we were talking earlier with guys and bros and like, you know, a lot of earlier paranormal television was more thrill seeking, or, you know, let's go out into this extreme thing and we're going to be locked and they're going to shut us and lock us into the freezer of the mortuary or something like that, you know? And it was more like stunts versus a lot of investigation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, I think Heather and I came from such a different place to begin with, because that Paranormal State was not a thrill-seeking show.
Right.
You know, Paranormal State was very much based off of the work of PRS, and it was always about the clients. It was never about us. You know, so I think automatically we started from the place of, we're actually investigators. We're not just doing this for, you know, to get scares. So I think because we were kind of branded that way to begin with, I think it's been probably an easier transition for us. But I think maybe the biggest thing I've seen change-wise has been, Heather, I don't know if you remember this, and I don't want to say who said it, but when Heather and I first started doing Paranormal State, there was somebody in the field who said, "We only got our jobs because we were pretty."
I remember
that. Yeah. And I remember hearing that, and I was so mad, because we had, you have to understand, as far as the openings on Paranormal State, there were like over 200 people, I think maybe over 400 people. It was something like that, that came out to try out for the show.
Wow.
And Heather and I were two of three that graduated from the training course for PRS. You know, so it was never a thing of, oh, hey, they're attractive, let's just put them on the show. It was, you know, I'm sure, like, you know, that plays a part for sure. But it was also, hey, these are two really smart women who are ambitious, who want to do this, who care about the field. They would make a great mix on the show because of that, you know? And I think now that we've been doing it for 15 years, people have started to realize that maybe we're not just a pretty face, that maybe we actually, you know, do have a spot in the field and that we do good work. And that's what got us there.
Yeah.
When I think back to those early days and the way that like women were represented on paranormal shows, it seemed like the women were the psychics or they were just the researchers. And now it's definitely branched out to where, you know, they're interviewing, they're doing the tech and the field work and everything like that. But I think back to PRS and when I first found out about the club, it was a student run paranormal club completely backed by the university. And when I started going to meetings, I realized it wasn't just a normal club. It was really serious. And to become a field investigator, you had to go through like a very extensive training process where it wasn't just like a normal club. It was like you were adding a whole other class onto your curriculum. You had to take tests. You had to take these huge vocab tests. And you didn't get any credit for it because you were, you know, we were doing this out of like such a passion for this subject and we wanted to learn more about it. But yeah, I remember writing like research papers. We learned about famous cases. We learned a lot about demonology, psychology. So we really got trained very well when it came to like, especially working with clients, because that's a whole other story. Rather than just going into like a haunted location investigating, like working with clients adds a whole other level to what you're doing. And it's really tough. And I remember that class, the training program had like a dropout rate of like 70, 75%. And Katrina and I were the only kind of two. And there was one other person that stuck with it the whole way through. We showed up every week to our meetings. We passed our tests, you know, we did really well. And then when I joined that club, I didn't know about a TV show at all. I just started going and it was fun. And I remember thinking of all the clubs I wanted to join. And I was going to twirl baton in the blue band, which would have been I was going to join the juggling club, the French club, or the comedy club. And then I chose PRS. And I often think back to like, I wonder how different my life would be.
You'd be a mime somewhere in France.
I would. I totally would be a mime. But no, I think that we went through a very unique experience. And just being thrown into a television series in college and working with, you know, all these researchers you read about as a kid, it was just like a really incredible experience. And I think it really prepared us for, you know, the things we went on to next.
Yeah. That's one thing I really liked about Paranormal State is that you guys focused on, you know, helping people and real cases. And you could tell you guys did your work, you know, you did your research. I mean, you guys, you know, not your words, not just a pretty face, but you guys actually put in the time and the work and the effort to further your investigative techniques and to learn about all this, the science behind it and everything too. So yeah, I always enjoyed Paranormal State and it's good to get that insight about how you guys jumped in and on that. That's cool.
And a lot of people don't know this too, but the original concept of Paranormal State, it was originally called Paranormal U, and the original concept was supposed to be more like, they were following us to parties while we went and helped these families. It was more of like the college atmosphere because the creator of our show created Laguna Beach. So it was kind of in that direction where there was going to be drama and things like that. So I'm really glad that it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah. Haunted hookups. Yeah. It would have been weird.
Yeah.
I might've watched that. That might've been cool too, but I'm glad, you know, as I look back on my college career and my wife and I met in the University of Nebraska Cornhusker marching band. So I had a lot of friends that were baton twirlers.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
But I'm glad, you know, they didn't have video cameras following us around to all the band parties and the rookie beer slams and all that kind of stuff. It would not, I wouldn't enjoy the adulthood that I have now if I had to look back and all that, if it was all on YouTube. So yeah, you guys have been doing this for 15 plus years. So let me ask you a couple of like investigation kind of questions. I know like you guys go, like you went to places years ago and then you're kind of, you know, you kind of go back and visit them later. Have you noticed like as times change or have you've changed, did the locations kind of change? Did the hauntings kind of change? Did the psychical energy that's in these places, do you pick up on shifts in that, you know, when you go to like repeat locations years later?
Trying to think of like a specific case, maybe we both revisited, but I don't know.
Like your new show that you guys put on, the web series, Travel the Dead, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You guys went to White Hill Mansion. And now, Heather, you've never been there before you filmed all this.
No, never
been. And Katrina, you were there before and you kind of talked about your experiences being there before. I'm just wondering if other people are leaving psychic energy there that you might pick up on, or places getting charged, or if you've changed, like, you know, are your skills better?
Oh, for sure. I think the longer you're an investigator, the better you get, hopefully. I mean, that's the hope. But I think with White Hill specifically, I had been there. We filmed Travel the Dead in 2020. And I had been there in 2016 with Paranormal Lockdown, and I had an experience, and it wasn't scary in the way that, you know, we hear of people being like, and then the demon came out and grabbed me. It wasn't like anything like that, but right. It was jarring enough where it stuck with me and where I could never find a natural explanation for it. And for me, those are the ones that kind of keep me up at night. The ones that I'm like, what was that? Like, I don't know what caused that to happen. And I know something happened, you know? So then I took Heather back, and the experiment that we tried was, we didn't tell Heather anything. She didn't even know we were taking her to Jersey. She just thought she would. She thought she was still in Pennsylvania. And we didn't tell her anything. We let her go into the house, and she, you know, we were filming her, what she thought she was picking up on. And then she investigated solo, where she was self-shooting. And what's funny about that is her experiences and what she felt subjectively matched up so much with what hundreds of other people have said about that place, you know? And as far as like, did I feel the shift in that building? I don't know. It's hard to say, because I kind of think any place you go, if you do a repeat visit, regardless of how many times you've gone, I don't know that you can say it's going to be the same every single time, you know, because we still don't really understand what properties make up a haunting.
You know, I talked to a friend of the program, Johnny Hauser, and, you know, he's the longtime caretaker of the Villisca Axe Murder House. And he talks about how he thinks, you know, not to steal his thunder, but what he's kind of said to me, and I've heard him say it on other shows, is that when he started, you know, working there, or, you know, earlier on, it was it felt like a different kind of haunting. And it's almost like people that investigate there are bringing their own kind of spiritual baggage to the place. And are things being conjured up? Are things manifesting due to the investigative techniques or the provocation of some investigators? I just wondered if our locations changing over time. I don't know, like, you seasoned investigators that go to a lot of different places. I was just kind of picking up on your experience with that.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like in our White Hill episode, we kind of mentioned about how, you know, every place we go, we kind of leave an imprint of ourselves there. And I think a lot of the times it has to do with your own energy and your consciousness of how you are going into these places. And just imagine like all the different kinds of people that go in. Some people are negative, some people are positive. So I think that can kind of like build up and change the experience. But I can't think of any location I've been to that kind of like the same thing happens every time. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of different. And sometimes you go back to a location you've been to a bunch and like nothing happens. So I don't think there's like a clear cut answer for that, but it's interesting to think about. And then I know Katrina and I were talking about this too, when we started coming up with, you know, ideas for Travel Dead, we talked about how locations were shut down a long time because of the pandemic. And we wondered if that affected things, you know, with heavily haunted places that always have tours nightly, daily, you know, how does that affect it being closed for months and maybe like a year with no one in there? You know, how does it affect the people's first experience going in there when it reopens.
One thing I noticed, and I don't know if I talked about this with you earlier in the year, Heather, but in Omaha, there's a theater, not a movie theater, but kind of like a live production theater where you would see plays and musicals and things like that. And during the pandemic, it was, you know, there was nobody touring, there was no productions being put on. They still had an office staff because it's a nonprofit in town, and they were still working to kind of put something together, or education, virtual events and everything. So the staff was still there, but I had the opportunity to go and do an investigation by myself solo in this theater. And they gave me the entire run of the place all day, from the very basement storage all the way up to the rafters in this historic old building. And I interviewed staff that was there and talked to them about things that had happened and what people have experienced kind of traditionally over time. And it was really weird. Like, I think some paranormal stuff happened to me. I had doors close and I felt like I was brushed up against. Who knows? You know, I mean, I can't say what it was, but I was just thinking, like, during that pandemic time, when a place is usually filled with people, and it's usually people applauding and having a good time, or sad what they see on stage, you know, brings tears to their eyes, a lot of emotion going back and forth. And when that's not happening, what kind of an effect that might have on, you know, the spirit world, you know, with that not happening and just little old Brian walking there around by myself, you know? So I wondered if things in that kind of situation would be heightened or lessened with, during the pandemic, you know, how things change like that.
Yeah, I think it's case by case situation. We've talked to some people where it seems like activity was heightened when there were less people. And then there were locations we went to where they're like, it was completely dead without the people here, you know? So it just kind of seemed to be a toss up.
There were some scenes in Travel the Dead, especially Katrina, like you were like, I'm scared, you know, yeah. And I appreciate that truthfulness. I appreciate like the reality of like, you know, that hesitation or that kind of, because you've been doing it for years and years and years, and yeah. You have TV shows and you've been to all these dozens of places and hundreds of places, probably yeah. Hundreds of investigations. And you're just like, I'm a little scared. So when you're done with an investigation and that's all done and you go home and decompress, like, what do you do to kind of not bring that home with you, you know, not a spiritual attachment so much, but just like what's going on in your head about if you go to a tragic location?
Yeah. For me, I think it's, I ignore my phone and then I watch 80s sitcoms. That's what I do. I was telling Heather actually last night, cause we were talking about, we did a thing online and I was saying how, I went down the serial killer rabbit hole recently. And because every now and again, I get into true crime, you know, and during the pandemic, I stopped though. And I have a lot of true crime books. And once the pandemic hit, no true crime, because it was just, there was too much going on. And so I watched Perfect Strangers. I think I watched Perfect Strangers like 3 times during the pandemic because I'm like, oh, it's happy. Oh God.
Right. Heather just plays her SG guitar. Or Gibson.
Yeah, I just rock out, do some roller skating. I remember though, you know, when we worked with a lot of clients in college, I remember, you know, we worked on some pretty heavy cases, especially like the first ones we started filming as episodes. And I remember going back to just our regular college life after like a weekend of madness, and just, you always had that family kind of in the back of your mind thinking like, are they okay? Did we help them? You know, what's going to happen tomorrow? And I always remember that being like such a heavy thing to like go through. It's like thinking about these families, because you saw these families suffering, and sometimes we knew how to help them and other times there was just no resolution. So that's something something one of you guys said, it kind of triggered that, like thinking about that in college and just not really knowing how we helped the clients.
Yeah. I think it was hard too, because I actually remember specifically, it was around the time we were doing IM6. Mm. And I was trying to tell a friend, like, they were like, what's going on in your life? And I was like, like, we're working on this case and I don't know. And I was explaining it to them and their response was, I literally don't know how to respond to you. They're like, I don't know what to say. I was like, yeah, I know. It can be kind of isolating in that way, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so I feel like our friendship is so special because, you know, we like, you know, who else am I going to talk to about this? Yeah. No one else.
Yeah. Who else can I talk to about this shit? Right. Yeah. When you're putting together a show like this, like your web thing, and you guys are going to work on another one? Is that what you said earlier?
Yeah. We actually filmed like 5 more. So,
oh, wow,
and then,
cool.
Yeah. We just had a couple of things that were out of our control and we couldn't move them along as fast as we wanted to. So, but they're moving along now. So, we have 5 more coming, and then we've been talking about going out and doing some more.
Fun. So are these the same kind of concept, like bite-sized, like 10, 12-minute episodes?
Yeah, we wanted to make them, overall, each location is about an hour, but they're, as far as when they premiere on YouTube, they are shorter. And we did that for a couple of reasons, and we'll see how it goes in the future. We've kind of talked about maybe releasing everything at once or, maybe a little longer than 10 minutes. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's no, for a guy at home, it's really no different than, you know, waiting for a commercial break or something like that. But I just thought it was cool. I thought it was, you know, a different way to do it. So I appreciated that. I also appreciated when you guys had Michelle Belange on the show, psychic, and I'm starting to get more and more into psychic phenomenon and how it all wraps up into this whole haunting and this whole mystery of the afterlife. And she was really hitting some things. And I like how you guys were filming it. Like, I assume it was on Zoom or FaceTime. You just kind of had her on your phone. And kind of talk me through that. Like, she was just hitting all these things while you were walking through the place. And she was, you didn't tell her where you're at. She's got old person eyes like I do. So she couldn't see through the FaceTime exactly like recognizable things like where you were at. So totally going in blind. And she was just hitting all these remarkable things.
Yeah. So Michelle's located in Ohio and White Hill Mansion is in New Jersey. We did not tell her anything. She had no knowledge. And we just asked her, can you tap in and just tell us whatever you pick up on? And, you know, Heather and I have both worked with Michelle for 15 years. So we kind of have like a good understanding of working with each other. With the FaceTime, what's interesting is Michelle, like you said, she needs glasses. So during the call, she didn't have them on. So even if she could see through the phone, everything would have been very blurry. But we also were in the dark and our camera lights were shining right on my phone. So all she would have, if she could have seen anything, it would have just been camera lights at most. But what's interesting is how much she hit on, including, I think the biggest takeaway for me was there was a volunteer at White Hill who saw the apparition of a little boy with like a blonde hair, kind of Dutch boy cut, with chubby cheeks in the range of like 3 to 5 years old. And wouldn't you know it, as we're in the room where the volunteer saw this figure, Michelle starts picking up on the spirit of a little boy, same age range, same haircut, same hair color, with chubby cheeks. And I think, you know, we can look at a lot of things in the ghost world as misidentification or, you know, maybe there's an explanation with the environment or psychological or whatever. But when you have a psychic that has no idea where you are, what you're doing, and they nail a description like that, to me, that just goes beyond coincidence.
Oh, yeah.
It was insane, too, because, you know, she didn't know we were hanging out together. But before we even started filming, Katrina was talking to her. I think you guys were texting and she was like, it looks like you're with someone that looks like Heather. And then she also picked up on someone else that was there that she had never even met before. So right then we're like, okay, this is going to be good. it's amazing to me to think about how she does that, because I know like doing that on an actual location with her, she picks up on other people's energy and she picks up on different layers. So in my head, I'm like, how do you differentiate that? Because sometimes she'll say things that kind of we realize it doesn't relate, but it could relate to someone else or someone else's experience that they have there. So it's like really bizarre, like how her brain works. I just don't think we'll ever understand it.
Yeah. She even, everybody will see this in an upcoming episode of Travel the Dead. Again, every single time we bring Michelle in, it's remote, right? And if, I mean, it was really because COVID, to be honest, but it ended up being a really, it worked so well on the first one where we were like, holy cow, this is actually really cool. Let's do it for every single one. And the next one we went to was an old bed and breakfast. And again, Michelle has no idea where we are. I mean, we could have been in a prison. We could have been at an old fort. She has no clue. And she starts saying, she's like, okay, I'm seeing these like beds. They're these wooden carved beds. And she starts describing them to a T of what's in this bed and breakfast. And then she sketched them out. And wouldn't you know what? She sketched out one of the beds.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
It is crazy. I love watching shows like that and like how that stuff is revealed and how it's revealed to us. Cause it's just this big mystery and we're just trying to figure out and people are kind of gifted to unlock some of it, but not all of it. And it's just neat how that all unfolds on a show and that, how you guys capture it.
It would actually be really entertaining if we went to a location that like wasn't haunted, like a 7-Eleven or some random filmed. We filmed doing a remote reading just to prove to people that she rules, you know. That'd be fun to do.
Well, she'd probably pick up on like, you know, what time the boss got in that day or, you know, something about how clean the bathroom was in the 7-Eleven. So when you guys, with all your experience, what's the best, and this is a two-parter, obviously, but what's the best part for you guys doing paranormal investigations? Like, what do you live for when you're doing one?
For me, it's just kind of like going through the different like sections of history for the locations. That's probably one of my favorite parts because you just learn so much and it just like takes you to another time period. Mm-hmm. And overall, I'd say working in this field definitely makes you think about death differently. And it gives you a better understanding for kind of like living your life to the fullest. At least that's how I feel. Because you really are thinking about death a lot, you know, it's constantly you go onto these locations and you think like, oh, how are the people that were here? How did they die? It's just like something you can't really escape, when you're in this field. So I would say the history and just like, just exploring and actually having things happen that you can't find a natural explanation for. Just kind of going through those steps of trying to rule out natural explanations is always like kind of sometimes challenging and fun for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the same, definitely with the history and traveling. And I get really excited when the energy shifts and you can feel that something is different. And that normally is a precursor to something objective happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most exciting time because you know something is different. You know something's about to happen. And it's an interesting thing that kind of occurs because I almost feel like whoever you're investigating with, it reminds me of like, you know, high school days when you're with your friends and breaking into places you shouldn't be.
Right.
And, you know, and it just kind of becomes, it really does bond you to whoever you're with. And it's just kind of a fun, unique experience to have.
Yeah. Well, what's the worst part?
Oh gosh. I think when you have to investigate in really cold weather, you don't have any heat, you don't have bathrooms, you don't have electricity, there's bugs in your hair, like, or like nothing's happening. That's the other part that kind of sucks because it can be really boring.
Yeah.
I would say like never getting enough sleep, never feeling really that well rested. For me with, you know, I kind of did the switch into the world of ufology and from Alien Highway. For me, for that, it was probably like dealing with a lot of like environmental factors because you're always outside and worrying about wild animals, which is something I never really had to worry about when I'm just in a haunted prison or something like that. But definitely not getting a lot of sleep. And to work in this field, I feel like you need a lot of patience. And some people just don't have patience. So that's one thing to keep in mind. You got to be really patient because things aren't always just going to happen, you know, that quickly. You have to be really patient and you have to experiment and try a bunch of different things until you figure out, you know, what works for whatever location you're at.
Yeah. I love the history of places. I love going into either a rundown place and I'm trying to imagine it in its prime, you know, when it was beautiful or when it was really fixed up or brand new, or I go in with a sense of appreciation when you go into a place that is fixed up, that's old, and you can like almost step back into time. Like, this is how the people that we're trying to make contact with, this is how they experienced it. So that's always fun. And yeah, the worst is dirty, stinky, mildewy, moldy locations that don't have anything really happening paranormally.
I feel like too, when you think of like new buildings, there's just no personality or character to them anymore. It's just like everything's so square looking and white. You know what I mean? It's like, I really appreciate old brick and the different like little elements of architecture on old buildings. And it's just so sad to me when people tear down old historical buildings because there's nothing that's ever going to be as unique as that again.
Yes, girl. I am so on that. No, it drives me nuts too. And you nailed it with why is every kitchen white? Every kitchen is white right now. White subway tiles, white kitchen island, white cabinets, white. Yep. Like it's.
Yeah. Have you never made spaghetti sauce? Why would you want a white kitchen?
Oh my gosh, please make my kitchen all sorts of colors so people don't understand how dirty I am. Like, need to hide my filth.
Yeah, for real. All right. Your favorite locations like that you've been to.
Oh, this is always so hard.
Right? It's like picking a favorite child.
Yeah. I really like Virginia City, Nevada. That's one location that always sticks in my head because it's like you're really stepping back in time. That whole area is beautiful. And I feel like the Washoe Club is a location that I've been there a couple times and it's probably one of my favorites just because like when you're there, you just feel like you're in a little old West town and people dress up. It's kind of like Gettysburg in a way, but I really like that place. I like asylums, but at the same time, they really scare me and they always tend to be the most active. So I do like going to asylums because you always kind of get something out of it. But for me, I'd probably say the Washoe Club. That kind of sticks out.
I'm going to say England today. A lot of times I say Trans-Allegheny and I do love Trans-Allegheny, but I'm going to give it to our friends across the pond because we're talking about history and cool architecture and all that stuff. And I just think, I mean, gosh, we got to live in castles a couple of times and like these manors that, right. You know, people who were friends with Queen Elizabeth I would hang out in. And I slept in like was it 1,000 years or over 1,000 years? Something like that. I slept in like 1,000-year-old Abbey. And like, you know what I mean? It's just like that was a really surreal time working over there.
Yeah. 1,000 years old. You're over here. Things might be 100 years old. I know you've been in some places like White Hill that's hundreds of years old, but yeah. I had a conversation with Greg Lawson on the show. And he was telling me a story on how his wife and he were on an investigation in Dracula's castle and she took a nap in Dracula's castle. And I'm like, man,
it's so cool.
I would not be able to sleep in Dracula's castle.
Oh my gosh, I would. But it's a funny thing when that happens. Like that, the Abbey one, I remember I had this moment and because it didn't have a roof anymore. So I was sleeping outside. And I had this moment where I was like lying down and I was looking at the stars and I was like, I'm sleeping in 1,000-year-old Abbey in Wales. like, this is so weird. Yeah, you kind of have those little moments to yourself on investigations.
Amazing. So you guys got a lot going on. I'm really happy to hear that you guys are putting out more Travel the Dead because you guys work well together. It's cool that you're friends, you know, it's not like a forced, you know, relationship where like a casting agent just put people together to see if it works. You know, it's good to see you guys have like a buddy cop kind of a Like from the 80s. We were talking about 80s TV. So, you know, it's like, you know, like a buddy cop movie from the 80s, you know. So,
oh my gosh. Well, you just gave me an idea, Heather. We should totally dress up in 80s garb for an investigation.
Totally.
Make a total 80s episode.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, right.
So into that.
Cool. Well, listen, it's been such a pleasure to have you guys on the show. I know our time's coming to an end here, but I've been, you know, I've been following you guys' career for a long time. And Heather, what a treat it was to meet you earlier in the year. And our paths will cross again, it looks like, in a few months in December over at that old, over that old Malvern Manor once again.
Uh-huh. Totally.
So, but so you're working on this thing. I know right now we probably can't talk a lot about it, but just from what he's teased on his own website and social media, Chad Kalick's putting out a documentary that he's got a lot of heart and soul in, called Harbinger, and just talking about all kinds of things. And you're involved with that, pretty heavily.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I can't really say too much about it, but it focuses on the very negative history concerning Native Americans, and kind of covered up history in the Omaha and Iowa area.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. It of course has the paranormal feel to it, but it's more so about his personal situation with his family mixed in with like the history of the area. And I did a lot of research on the area and, you know, contacting Native Americans, and you just learn about so much really negative history that was covered up. And, you know, does that kind of contribute to what happens in that area?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I know, you know, you and I had a conversation on camera, and I had a conversation on camera with Chad about that. And if it doesn't end up on the cutting room floor, then we'll have an IMDb credit together or something like that. But yeah, it was really cool. You guys are totally professional, you and Chad, and you know, watching you guys work together and how you, from everything from framing shots to how you're going to do a particular interview or a discussion, just watching you guys work, it was really interesting, and I really had a good time doing that. And Katrina, just watching you over the years, and I'm just a big fan of your technique and everything that you do. You bring a lot of style to television. I'm glad to, I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting us.
You bet. Everybody, I've had the pleasure to talk to Heather Taddy, Katrina Weidman here on Necronomicast. Follow them. I'll put links to all the stuff that they're doing, especially their YouTube channel stuff, so you can follow along on their adventures. Ladies, thanks again for being a part of the program.
Thank you.
There we go, everybody. Episode 234 with Heather Taddy and Katrina Weidman. That was really fun. You know, I had the opportunity, like you heard, to work a little bit with Heather Taddy. Super professional, super smart. I was very impressed. Had to have them on the show. Katrina, been watching her investigations for a long time. All right, more October programming coming your way. Episode 235 next week, y'all. Becky Ann Galantine, Mystery and History. Here's what she has to say. Influencer, professional embalmer, licensed embalmer, paranormal investigator. Coming out October 7th. Why, that's my birthday, and it's a present to all of you, listeners of Necronomicast. All right, like, subscribe, leave a nice review. Send me an email if you don't like the show. Don't leave a bad review. Nobody has, but just don't. We don't need any of that. Happy Halloween, everybody. Thanks for listening.